How do we even know what we know? I mean, that question, it feels like it's got to be the starting point for pretty much everything else, doesn't it?
It really does. That's epistemology, right? The whole study of knowledge.
Yeah.
And for some ways of thinking, like the one we're looking at today, you absolutely have to start there before you can talk about anything else. You need to figure out how you know.
Exactly. And that's what this deep dive is all about. We're digging into some specific sources, pages 41 to 61 of a systematic theology text. And our goal, to really pull out the core ideas this text presents about knowledge, especially how it links up with God's attributes and revelation.
Yeah, the big idea, the thread running all through these pages, is that God himself is the absolute foundation for knowing anything. And like you said, this text insists that epistemology, figuring out how we know, has to come first, even before ethics or anything else, really.
It definitely sets up a specific way of looking at, well, everything. Okay, so let's get into the sources argument. It starts in this section on page 41 by looking at some of God's attributes.
Right. It jumps straight into God's nature. The idea presented is that you can't understand knowledge properly without first understanding what God is like. It doesn't start with, you know, human senses or reason. It starts with God.
And that first attribute they focus on, which seems really central to their view of knowledge, is God's infallibility.
Yes. The argument is that God cannot lie. It's presented as fundamental to his being, not just a choice he makes.
They bring in numbers, Trump 3.19, right? God is not a man that he should lie.
Exactly. And the takeaway for the source is that this makes God the only truly reliable source of truth. If he can't lie, then he's the bedrock. He's where certain knowledge has to come from.
Okay, but then on page 42, the text brings up something that sounds, well, almost contradictory. It talks about God being both knowable and incomprehensible. How does that work?
It's a really interesting part. The text claims that everyone deep down has an innate knowledge of God, not learned, not figured out, but placed there by God himself right from infancy.
So it's not like we look at the world, see complexity, and then conclude there's a God.
According to the source, no. It makes a very sharp distinction. This innate knowledge is separate from your senses, from observation, from empirical data. Nature might, you know, remind you of it, stir it up, but the knowledge itself doesn't come from nature. And it also says unbelievers actively suppress this knowledge.
Hmm. And that leads to a pretty strong stance against empiricism then.
Oh, definitely. The text argues that relying on empirical observation as your primary way to get knowledge, especially about God, is basically wrongheaded according to scripture. It even calls it the kingdom of self.
Wow.
Yeah. The view here is that empirical data just doesn't have a necessary link to that foundational knowledge of God's attributes because those are known innately. God is framed as the sole knowledge dealer, you could say. Human effort starting from observation just can't get you there fundamentally.
Okay, so if empirical data isn't the route to knowing God, according to the source, then where does more knowledge come from? Page 44 tackles this, right?
It does, and the answer is pretty direct. Revelation. God revealing things is presented as necessary to gain true knowledge beyond that basic innate sense, especially for like intellectual understanding of God and his truth.
So it's not just innate feelings. There's specific content that needs to be revealed. It mentions 2 Corinthians 4.6, I think.
Yes. The core idea is if you want real, certain knowledge about the big questions about God, it has to be given by God. You can't just discover it all by yourself, starting from human experience or reason alone.
All right. Moving on a bit to page 57. The text brings up God's self-existence, things like everlasting to everlasting and I am who I am.
That's right.
How does that attribute connect back to knowledge for this source?
Well, it's pretty fundamental to their whole structure. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
If knowledge needs an ultimate, unshakable foundation, that foundation can't depend on anything else for its existence.
Okay, I see.
So the argument, kind of woven through, is that only a being who exists entirely from himself, who isn't caused or dependent, only that kind of being can be the ultimate ground for reality, and therefore for truth and knowledge. God just is. He doesn't need anything else.
Page 57 also brings up immutability again, God's unchangeableness. We saw that with infallibility. But then it makes this really deep connection between God and logic itself.
Yeah, this is maybe one of the most striking claims in this section. The source doesn't just say God is logical or follows logic. It says God is truth and logic.
He is logic. So logic isn't some abstract thing outside of God.
Exactly. That's the argument. Yeah. Because God's very nature embodies principles like the law of non-contradiction, he literally cannot be illogical or contradict himself. It's not possible for him.
And they use that example, right? If God says Jesus is my son, he can't also affirm something totally contradictory like your mom is a fish.
Right, because his very being is that principle of non-contradiction. The text describes God as this intellectual and spiritual mind whose words reflect his nature. So logic isn't grounded in human thought or abstract rules, but in God himself.
Then page 60, this was fascinating. The source talks about God's own thinking process. It says God thinks deductively.
Yeah, specifically when considering his creation, it posits his thinking is inherently deductive.
And it points to Paul in 1 Corinthians talking about his demonstration, which the source calls apodexis.
Yes, and apodexis is defined here as a sound deductive argument, one that gives you certainty, gives you knowledge. And the claim is Paul did this using scripture, God's own word, as his starting premises, his absolute truths.
And that's contrasted with someone like Aristotle using observation science as the starting point.
Exactly. The source sees starting with observation, which leads you down the path of induction as a, well, a major blunder if what you're after is certain knowledge.
Okay, so what's the issue with induction, according to this text?
The argument is that deduction just applies or reveals what's already contained in the true premises. It's like the source says putting a finger on a specific point that is already there.
Right.
And for God, whose knowledge is infinite anyway, deduction is basically instantaneous, like intuition, but induction. The source calls it a formal fallacy, even anti-logic.
Anti-logic, why?
Because the conclusions you draw from induction aren't guaranteed by the premises. You're making a leap, introducing new information that isn't necessarily true or certain. For this source, that leap makes it unsuitable for gaining foundational, certain knowledge.
So God's thinking, being deductive, is directly tied to his decrees making things reality. His thought is the source of certain knowledge.
That's the picture painted here, yes. His deductive thought reflects his perfect logical nature and is the origin point for all certainty.
Okay, so if we pull all these pieces together, God's infallibility, his self-existence, his unchangeableness, the idea he is truth and logic, that he puts innate knowledge in us, that we need his revelation, and even that he thinks deductively.
Yeah.
It all seems to point back to one main idea.
Absolutely. The source consistently hammers home this central theme. God, with these specific attributes and his specific ways of relating knowledge to us, is presented as the only possible, absolute, non-negotiable foundation for any real knowledge or logic.
And conversely, any system that tries to start somewhere else with human senses, human reason alone is presented as fundamentally flawed, right?
Yeah.
Incapable of reaching certainty and maybe even hostile to this God-centered foundation.
That's precisely the argument laid out in these pages. It's a very strong claim about the necessary starting point for all knowing.
Well, we've certainly covered a lot of ground there, digging into how this specific source connects God's nature directly to the very possibility of knowledge. From infallibility and immutability through innate knowledge and revelation, right up to God's deductive thinking.
It's a tightly woven argument, presenting God not just as a subject of knowledge, but as the prerequisite for knowledge itself. The text really does argue forcefully that any other starting point is, from its perspective, doomed to fail in finding certainty.
It definitely leaves you with something to think about. If, as this source argues so strongly, God is the sole necessary ground for all knowledge and logic, what does that imply about everything else we think we know, perhaps through science or reason or experience, if we don't start there? According to this view, what happens when we try to build our understanding on a different foundation?
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenging question, definitely something to mull over.